Now on a farm, a young blonde woman rides a horse onto a dusty road. A title appears, The Wedding Dress. Starring Neil Patrick Harris as Travis, Margaret Cullen as Madeline, Catherine Dora Brown as Zoe, Wolfgang Buttison as Paul, Kim Hawthorne as Laura, Jay Brazeau as Art, Peter Wingfield as Steve, Donnelly Rhodes as Deke, Lena Teal as Lula, Darcy Belcher as Billy, and Tyne Daly as Joan. As a mail truck pulls away, the woman stops near the side of the road and reaches into a mailbox. On its side, pink script spells out Pinkham. Nearby, a little girl holds a lunchbox and swings a stack of books tied on a strap. The blonde woman reads a letter.
Hannah, the moon is so bright tonight.
This cold forest feels as far from you as I could be.
Now a young man lies in a tent writing.
Just a few hours, the world seems small again. I have some incredible news. By the time you receive this, I'll be somewhere mid-Atlantic, steaming towards you at 20 knots. I want to marry you the minute I'm home.
Until then, I'm jealous of the moon. Mary! Mary!
The little girl runs over.
He's coming home! He's coming home!
Now, inside the farmhouse, Hannah walks down a staircase, holding a bolt of sheer white fabric. It billows gently behind her as she walks, gliding past a small window to the porch where two men saw wood. In the living room, a sleeveless wedding dress sits on a dress form. A woman joins Hannah, holding a pearl necklace.
Mom, those are your good pearls. Oh, they're perfect for the bodice. Now, one more time.
I've already done this.
Measure twice, cut once.
Hannah's mother holds up a measuring tape. More titles, music by Mader. Edited by Lisa Bromwell, ACE. Production designer, Katarina Keith. Our view scans over the ornate white dress. Below, a sheer fabric panel, pearls accent a V-shaped neckline. A high-fitted pearl and lace collar and ruffled sleeves decorate the top. Directed by Sam Pillsbury. This program has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH, with funding by the U.S. Department of Education. Described by Allison White, Melissa Carlson, and Nicole Savickas. Read by Wendy Sacchichini. As Hannah wears the dress, the bottom of its A-line shape skims the floor. From her floral headpiece, a long, sheer veil trails over her shoulders. Now Hannah's mother leads her father into the room, his eyes closed.
Okay, now don't open them until I tell you. Woody?
What do you think, Daddy?
He opens his eyes.
Excuse me.
He steps out.
Daddy?
Let him go. He'll be fine.
Now a dark sedan with white stars on its doors approaches the house.
Oh my God, it's Hank!
The car parks. A blonde man in an army uniform approaches the house.
Hank!
The man steps onto the porch.
Captain Jeffries, man. Are you Hannah Pinkham?
Hannah's smile fades. Shakily, she backs toward her mother.
Mary, get your father.
Now Hannah runs down the back stairs. Holding the many layers of her dress up, she yanks off her veil. As her father hurries down the stairs, Hannah falls to her knees, her dress flowing out around her. She tears her veil into pieces. As her father approaches, she leans her head onto his shoulder. Now in the attic of the house, Mary drops a sachet into a trunk. Gazing downward, she slowly steps away as Hannah gently places the folded wedding gown inside.
I want to read something that I wrote for Hank.
Okay. Sunbeams shine through a window as they kneel in front of the chest.
Before you, I never dreamed that stars could rise under my feet, that eyes could sing, that we could go quietly about flinging open windows, though death itself had locked the door. One day may this dress be worn by someone who's found the kind of love where nothing is impossible.
She smiles sadly at her sister, then reaches forward and gently closes the trunk. The light fades as the cover descends over the white ruffles of the wedding dress. Now, a woman with curly dark hair opens the door to a studio apartment.
Iris! Oh, there's my girl.
Hello.
She pets the St. Bernard.
Come on, help me get this all set up, okay?
The woman, dressed in a short black skirt and boots, puts a grocery bag on the counter.
Travis. Yes, Travis is coming. Come on, we don't have much time.
She fills the dog's water bowl.
Okay, Iris, no wagging, no slurping, and no being a dog.
As she places flowers into a vase, Travis, a young man with a scruffy beard, walks in.
Where is she? Where's my girl?
Hey, sweetheart, come here.
Oh, you got fat. You got bathed. You didn't miss me at all. Hey, you.
Hey.
Travis gives her a hug.
Hi.
The place looks incredible.
You know me. I'm a fixer.
Zoe. I wish you had been with me in New York. You know me in organization. You are my right hand, my left brain, my north pole, and my south paw.
So, besides being miserable without me, did you manage to have fun and get famous?
Got a show at the Bierman Gallery this June. And photographs by Travis Cleveland at the Sinclair Studio in September.
Oh, are you serious? So, does this mean I should save your grocery list and make you sign my t-shirts?
Zoe, you're not going to believe this. I met the woman of my dreams.
Zoe gapes.
You never thought I'd get married, did you?
I did.
Well, you're right. It was fate. I met her at the Wheeler opening. She's one of his models.
Model?
Yeah. But I really think you'll like her. She's smart, and she's sensitive, and funny, and
beautiful.
I'm a goner. Oh, hey, would you get us a couple cappuccinos? Cass should be here any minute. And Cass said that she likes hers with extra foam.
He puts his hand over his heart. Now at a sidewalk coffee stand.
Hey.
Hey.
One with sugar, one without, and one with extra foam.
Got it.
And brown glass.
Behind her, a thin blonde woman steps out of a convertible. Now, inside the apartment, the woman and Travis kiss passionately. Zoe walks in. Seeing them, she kicks the door shut.
Red hot cappuccinos for the red hot lovers.
Cass, come here, Zoe. Zoe, I want you to meet my bride-to-be. Thanks.
Hi.
Iris. Iris, what's gotten into you?
Cass, I recognize you from magazines.
Which magazine?
Let's see, maybe Biker Mamas or Roughage and You.
She's funny, Travis. No wonder you liked her.
I'm nothing without Zoe. I'm nuts and she's the bolts. Iris, stop that.
Is that your dog, Zoe?
No, she's mine. Whenever I'm out of town like this, she, you know, wants my undivided attention.
Well, who can blame her?
Zoe rolls her eyes.
So, Zoe, do you have a boyfriend?
Yeah. Until recently.
Oh. Well, maybe you'll meet someone at our wedding. Wouldn't that be perfect?
Oh.
Travis, look. This is my absolute dream dress. And it costs an absolute fortune.
She shows him a magazine page.
Yeah, it's interesting. What do you think, Zoe?
Cass holds out the magazine. The model wears a short, tight, low-cut dress.
It kind of looks like a futuristic nurse uniform.
Excuse me? Do you realize who designed this dress? Wilhelmina Pringle. It'd
be like us coveting a Hasselblad, though. Hey, we want the best, right?
Well, I obviously do. Look who I fell in love with.
She puts her arms around Travis and they kiss.
Yikes.
Later, Zoe walks through the dark apartment.
Good night.
Zoe, come here. What do you think?
He hands Zoe a photo proof sheet, and she looks at it through a magnifier.
Wow. So impressed.
I don't believe my ears.
Don't flatter yourself. The lighting could be improved. You should have taken your assistant.
Oh, hey, I want to show you.
He shows her two black and white candids of Cass.
This very shot was my first glimpse of her. I wanted to capture the actual subjects of Wheeler's pose shots quickly to...
Have them as imposed as possible. Expose the real self observing the social self.
You know me too well.
Well, I know this much. I know that love is blind, and one of us needs a seeing-eye dog.
Am I that far gone?
Oh. Travis, there's something I have to tell you.
Look, is it about Cass? Because I know it seems shallow that I picked a beautiful model. It seems corny, but she's beautiful on the inside, too.
You're right.
You mean you can see that?
No, you're right. It sounds corny.
She has a degree in social work. She took care of a grandmother when she was dying of cancer. She has a good heart.
All I need to know is that you love her.
But I don't want you to like her, Zoe.
Maybe I will in time.
What did you want to ask me?
Sorry. Hello, Cleveland Studios.
Oh, hey, honey, we're just...
Whoa. Slow down.
Cass, do they know that that's not my specialty?
Uh-huh.
Let me... The photographer from Cass's shoot has pneumonia.
Now, at the photo shoot, workers hurry around a steaming locomotive. Cass stands on the engine wearing a long, lacy gown.
Cut!
What, sweetheart? Tell us, what?
This is not working. The wind, the smoke, my eyes are tearing, my makeup's running, and there's a bee somewhere, and I'm allergic to bees.
Maybe we should call in a SWAT team.
Zoe, turn the fan off.
Zoe squeezes by a light, knocking it over.
Whoa!
What is this, the third mistake in the last 3 minutes?
Who are you, elephant child?
Hey, she happens to be the best assistant around. Armand, if you have a problem, talk to me.
Travis turns away, meeting Cass's reproachful gaze. She points at Armand, then runs her finger across her neck. Travis shuffles back to Zoe.
Don't worry about that. We're doing great, okay?
This is unreal here. Doesn't that bother you? Hello? We're ready. Does anyone care? Can we shoot?
Later, Travis walks into his apartment with Iris.
Hey, Travis.
Hey, good morning. How'd those prints turn out? Armand needs them by 3.
Well, the locomotive looks great.
She hands him a proof sheet.
Oh, something big came for you. I think it's from your aunt.
Oh, cool. Could you open it for me while I check these out? Elephant child?
As Travis sits down at a desk, Zoe walks into the bedroom. Hunched over, she drags a large wooden trunk into the room. Travis looks up, his gaze fixing on the chest. Now, as Zoe unlatches a strap, Travis takes an envelope from the top. Zoe walks away.
Hey, don't you want to hear this?
Are you kidding? Of course I do. I was just pretending to respect your privacy.
He takes a key from the envelope and hands it to Zoe. Pulling out a note, he unfolds it, then reads.
My darling nephew, I was so happy to hear you found your soulmate. And I can't wait to meet her.
I remember how fascinated you were with the story of this dress. It wasn't my destiny to wear it, but perhaps it could be your bride's. I passed the dress on to you
now. Hopes that she will love it as much as I did.
Zoe gently lifts Hannah's ruffled wedding dress from the trunk. As she holds it at arm's length, sunlight shines through its sheer sleeves.
This is the most beautiful wedding dress I've ever seen.
Now with Cass.
Well, I'm sure it's beautiful, Travis. But can I just think about it? My heart's so set on the Wilhelmina Pringle.
Yeah, Cass, we can't afford that dress.
Daddy says he'll get it for me.
Look, let's just wait until you see Aunt Hannah's. I think that you're going to love it, and if you don't, then I totally understand.
Okay.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
As they kiss, Armand walks in and sits at his desk.
So, Armand, didn't I tell you he was a genius?
Obviously. I can't use these. They're far too... Well, they're too real. Women don't buy the cloth. They buy the image. The shot has to say, fun, sex, danger, catch me, play with me. These say, stiff girl standing on a train.
Cass picks up the photos.
Cass told me you wanted real.
Well, Travis, I didn't mean this real.
Later, they walk up to the studio.
They let you look natural and ravishing. Isn't that anyone's fantasy?
Don't worry, I'll get you another chance. Armand's not the only coordinator in the business.
It's not my thing, Cass. I'm happier doing the work I do.
Yeah, but it's limiting financially. I mean, why not broaden your options?
I make a fine living.
Inside, Zoe wears the wedding dress.
Travis, oh my God. I'm so sorry. I couldn't resist. Please forgive me.
No, it's okay, Zoe. Really, it's okay. Wow. You look...
Cass raises her eyebrows at him.
That dress is amazing.
Yes, it is, isn't it? I see what you meant, Travis. It's totally one of a kind. Travis, I'm so embarrassed. I had no right. Well, I can't wait to try it on. How about right now?
Why not?
Iris, let's go for a walk.
Cass starts to unfasten the dress. Later, she wears it.
So how long have you been in love with him? I can't remember when I wasn't. I've written him a goodbye letter. Could you give it to him for me?
You're leaving?
Tomorrow morning.
Huh.
Well, I'll have to hire him a male assistant. Any woman would fall in love with him. He gets more amazing the longer you've known him.
Cass looks at the dress in the mirror.
God, this looks like a lampshade in a whorehouse. Cass, you have no idea how much this dress means to Travis and his family. Pretend to like it. It's crucial.
Later.
So why are you helping me out? All the years I've known him, he's never been like this.
Zoe gives Cass an envelope.
He really loves you. Be good to him.
She leaves, carrying a box of her belongings. Cass watches Zoe walk out, then opens the letter. She reads. With a sneer, she wads up the paper and tosses it into the wastebasket. As she picks up her red leather purse, Travis walks in.
Hey! Oh, I missed you in the dress.
I'm so late to my parents. It's already 3. I loved it, though.
Good. Well, I'll bring it with me so they can see it, too. Where's Zoe?
Cass pauses near the door.
Honey, I hate to tell you on the run like this, but she said to tell you that she quit. She just left.
Are you serious? Did she say why?
Nothing. She was totally embarrassed. Maybe she just realized it was a dead-end job. Anyway, she said to tell you she's sorry. Travis, forgive me. I have to go.
Yeah, go. I'll see you soon. Bye.
She leaves. Travis digs his hands into his pockets, then furrows his brow. Now a Jeep pulls through a gate and into a driveway of a columned mansion. Cass's convertible sits parked outside. Travis walks up to the entrance with the wedding dress slung over his arm. He rings the bell. Inside, Cass wears the low-cut Wilhelmina Pringle dress. She looks into a mirror as her mother walks in.
Travis is here with his aunt's wedding dress.
Mom,
you've got to stall him. I'll introduce him to Grandma.
Now in an ornate parlor, Travis sits with an old woman.
She'll never find Mr. Wright. She's so picky.
Well, I'm glad she picked me.
I married the first man who winked at me. Just think. I might have married some nitwit with dust in his eye. But fate was kind. I got me a plum. But he's gone now. I lost Mr. Hotchkiss to cancer 2 years ago.
Yeah, Cass told me how close you and she became when she nursed you through your illness.
I've been in perfect health all of my life.
Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe she's talking about her other grandmother.
She died before Cass was born.
Cass said this was when she was getting her degree in social work at UCLA.
Wouldn't that be something if they gave degrees in socializing?
But she did go to UCLA, didn't she?
Oh, Travis, forgive me, but these are things you need to discuss with your bride.
Travis walks into the other room.
Travis.
He cocks his head.
I think you owe me an explanation.
And why is that? I don't tell you how to take your photographs, do I? That's your territory and I respect that.
Yeah, but this isn't just about a dress, Cass. This is about what we mean to each other. This is about trust. Why would you lie about UCLA?
I didn't lie. I took some extension classes.
Why would you tell me your grandmother had cancer?
So it was a friend's grandmother.
And what was that with Armand? You sold me down the river without a second thought.
I got you that opportunity, and you blew it.
Travis blinks repeatedly.
And you never had any intention of wearing the dress, did you?
Well, Travis, you're supposed to eat a wedding cake, not wear it.
His eyebrows raise.
Wow.
This is my wedding day. And if I can't make my own fashion statement on this day of all days, then guess who's not being respected?
You're absolutely right, Cass. And I don't think I can marry someone I don't respect.
Cass's eyes widen as Travis turns and leaves. In the adjoining parlor, he picks up the dress and walks out. Cass throws a bracelet onto the floor. Fade to black. In his dark apartment, Travis sits petting Iris. She tips the wastebasket over.
Iris, none of you.
As Travis bends to pick up the trash, he spots Zoe's crumpled note. Squinting, he unfolds the wrinkled paper. His eyes widen as he reads.
How I've loved being your right hand, your left brain, your north pole, and your south paw. It's sad that even with all those directions, I still couldn't find my way into your heart. I'll always love you, Zoe.
He puts the paper on his desk, grabs the phone, and dials. He glances at the note again, then leans back in his chair. Outside, a guy with rumpled, curly hair stands near Travis's Jeep. He glances around and jimmies open the driver's door. He gets in. The wedding dress sits on the back seat. The car drives away. Daytime. The man hurries into a salon where a 20-ish woman washes someone's hair.
1,600 hours of school. Then I get a license. And I can cut hair. Like my uncle said, a little hard work never killed anyone.
Yeah, but why take the chance?
Not one nickel, Billy.
Oh, come on, Lula, I'm not here for money.
Of course not. Where would I get that idea?
Let me take you to lunch, then.
I'm on a diet.
Okay, well, marry me, then. Marry you, Lula.
Oh, sure, so we can live in your mother's kitchen, sleep all day, scam all night. Well, then we can have kids, and you can grow up with them.
Lula...
Marriage is work, responsibility, something you know nothing about. You treat marriage like it's silly. Marriage is serious.
But I am serious, Lula. I need you in a serious, serious way.
Then do three things for me, Billy. Get a car, a job, and propose to me so sweet my knees quiver.
Well, I think I have the first one covered.
Now they walk together down a sidewalk. Lula's smile fades as they approach the stolen Jeep.
Billy, where did you get this?
That's not all I got, Lula. Look,
He reaches into the car.
I got a camera, too.
You know what you're gonna get? You're gonna get a rap sheet a mile long. You stole this whole rig, didn't you?
Come on, Lula. All I want to steal is your heart.
Prove to me you're responsible, and then we'll talk.
She storms away. Billy gets into the Jeep. He drives away. Now a heavyset man with a gray beard and a beret drives a taxi. He gestures expressively. As he drives down an alley, Billy drives nearby. Speeding, Billy scowls and smacks his palms on the steering wheel. Lowering the window, he shakes his head. In the back seat, the wedding dress flutters in the wind. Its billowy fabric flows to the front seat and over Billy's head. As it covers his face, the Jeep swerves. The taxi driver keeps his eyes on the road. In the Jeep, Billy flails, grabbing at the fluttering dress. As the taxi makes a turn, Billy heads straight for it.
No!
Billy narrowly misses, swerves sharply, and crashes through a fence. The taxi driver jumps out of the cab and runs toward him. In a scrap metal yard, Billy gets out, the dress still over his head.
Hey, are you all right?
He pulls the dress off Billy, and Billy runs away.
Where the hell are you going? What about your car?
The driver watches Billy run off, then looks down at the dress. As clouds of dust rise around him, he unfolds its delicate white fabric. He holds the dress against his body, gazes down at it, then looks away thoughtfully. Now in a diner, a curly-haired young woman serves a plate of food. At another table, the taxi driver stares at the menu. The waitress faces him.
Oh, Laura, you work too hard.
Oh, man, what you looking at that menu for? You know you're going to have your regular.
I'm trying to turn over a new leaf here, do something different, give my life some new life.
Oh, that would be nice.
So,
I'll have coconut dumped. That's healthy, right? Hey, how's Paul doing?
I hardly ever see him. When he's not at the hospital, he's at the library studying.
Well, it's all going to be worth it. I even got you an early wedding present.
All
Now at the crash site.
Anybody see a dress in there?
Yeah, no, it's a wedding dress. The camera, I don't care about, but the dress, it's irreplaceable.
There's no dress in there.
Hey, is there anything you guys could do? Could you put out an APB on it?
The two cops exchange a glance. Back at the diner, Art walks outside. Laura follows him to the cab. As Art opens the back door, Laura leans inside. Her eyes widen as she reaches for the dress.
Art, where did you get this?
It was a gift.
Somebody gave you a wedding dress?
Exactly.
Laura takes it out.
Could use a good home, huh? So, what do you think?
I've never seen anything so beautiful. You need a country club or a fancy hotel for something like this.
All you need is what you got.
Now let's see what Paul thinks.
Now a man in a lab coat leans against a payphone sleeping. Another man hangs it up.
I certainly hope it wasn't long distance.
Dr. Weininger. No, I'm just trying to call my future bride. We haven't seen each other since Sunday, I think. What day is it today?
Believe it or not, it was worse than my day. I remember my very first surgery. The procedure went perfectly. When it came time to sign the report, I couldn't even remember my own initials. So how's Laura?
Working too hard, sacrificing too much. She deserves a special wedding. But I'm afraid it's going to be a paper bag lunch and a Cracker Jack ring.
Paul, you are a billionaire where it counts. You invite me to the wedding.
Later, Paul walks up a dark, narrow staircase to his apartment. Inside, Laura stands on the opposite side of curtained French doors.
Don't come in here.
I need my bed.
Honey, please get a second wind tonight. I had such a wonderful day.
Good tips?
I phoned the electric company. We got an extension.
Yeah, well, if you're getting amorous in there, get it.
Paul sits down, leans back, and closes his eyes. Laura opens the French doors, wearing the wedding dress. She leans over and turns on a stereo. Paul turns to face her. He watches, his gaze fixed on Laura as she spins slowly. The ruffles of the dress gently billow on her thin frame. She smiles.
That's much too extravagant.
Paul stands.
I mean, we'd have to rent the Four Seasons to go with it, but isn't it beautiful? Art gave it to me. Can you believe it? It needs a little fixing, but look. It even fits perfectly.
She beams and saunters toward Paul.
May I have this dance?
I was wondering when this would happen. I am now officially hallucinating.
Laura gazes lovingly at Paul as he steps closer. She leans her head on his shoulder as he puts his arm around her. Resting his hand on the small of her back, they sway easily to the music. Later, in the bedroom, the dress lies at the foot of the bed. Paul walks in, dressed, from the other room. He glances at Laura, who sleeps, smiling. Picking up the dress, he places it on a hanger and hangs it up. Laura rolls onto her back, stretches, and opens her eyes.
I'll find a home for it today.
Don't you dare. We're keeping it.
He sits down next to her.
Gotta be practical.
I'll never understand you.
It's love sickness, that's all. My doctor.
She kisses him.
There ain't no cure.
He leans in and they kiss deeply. She strokes his cheek as they lay back on the bed. Later, outside, Paul beams as he walks proudly down a city sidewalk, his head held high. He passes by a stately brick hotel with a doorman standing outside. Pausing, he steps back and stares at the building. Now, inside an ornate hotel restaurant, a hotel employee faces Paul.
2,000. This is very short notice. We'll need 1,000 in advance by tomorrow. Cash, non-refundable.
2,000. We're on a very tight budget.
Up to you. Is a wedding something you put a price tag on?
bring you the cash tomorrow.
Later at the apartment.
I love Wednesdays! We're at home at the same time for 2 whole hours. Even when we're old and gray. Let's celebrate Wednesdays, okay?
A world full of voluptuous, cynical women, I fall for a skinny romantic.
He tosses aside bills.
You know, that's not easy to accomplish. We should win something. My tuition was due last week.
We have it, don't we?
No, we have $200.
What happened? I made a deposit.
Books, phone, rent, bus tokens. Pleasure cruises to Bora Bora.
Laura puts her hands on her hips.
What can we do?
Maybe I should put off school until we have some money set aside.
Again? You've waited so long. This is your last year. Let's just postpone the wedding.
No.
Paul walks over and rubs Laura's back.
Every day in the hospital, I see how fragile life is. I refuse to postpone our dreams.
Laura bites her lip, then turns and gazes at Paul. Now Laura stands outside a shop holding the dress. Letters on the shop window read, Wedding Bells. Inside the dress-filled shop, Laura watches a clerk examine her dress's lacy hem.
You know, repairs and dry cleaning alone are going to cost me a small fortune. Then I've got to tag it, mark it, inventory it, and sell it fast before it turns yellow. Want some gum?
It's a very special dress. You don't see details.
Honey, I have got 750 very specials in here, and every one of them has some sort of story to tell.
He pops a stick of gum in his mouth.
How much do you think?
600. Oh, oof. Do you know what? I'm too soft-hearted for this business.
The clerk opens a cash register, licks his thumb, and counts out several $100 bills. Laura stares off to the side, her brown eyes glistening. Now, Paul stands outside a pawn shop, clutching something in his hand. Inside, a clerk studies a gold watch. Paul looks on.
$10,000.
It's worth at least $4,000.
It's solid gold.
It was my father's.
And if I had a buck every time I heard that line, it would buy me Fort Knox. Take $1,000. Good lucky.
Paul grabs it back.
I'll give you $3,000 if you sell it to me outright.
No way.
Paul glances at the watch.
I'll take $1,000.
Now at the hotel, Paul hands money to the clerk.
I'll have the rest for you in a week.
We'll need the balance by Sunday.
That's in 3 days.
Yes, it is.
Now at the med school, Laura hands a clerk several $100 bills.
This is less than half his tuition. I can't overlook the late payment penalty again.
I'll get it.
Now at home, Paul answers the phone.
Hello?
Is Laura there?
She's not here, Mass. Who's calling?
This is Lauren at Wedding Bells. Your fiancé brought in her dress this morning, but it seems that she forgot to include the veil.
It didn't have one. Unless I didn't see one. Is she having it altered?
Not unless she wants to buy it back.
Later.
This dress is the rarest find of all. Mint condition, antique.
Now, you want to go up to Velma's and pay retail for cheesy design and polyester lace? Be my guest. But $1,000 for this dress.
A bargain. Well, how much did you get Laura for?
Oof, plenty. I am way too generous.
Well, how about renting it?
We don't rent.
You could if you wanted to.
Look, Romeo, don't get smart, okay? You want to get up on that balcony, you gotta climb a prickly vine. I don't make the rules. $1,000. No checks, Visa, or MasterCard. Gum, however, is complimentary.
Later.
You told me $2,000 more if I sold it outright instead of taking the loan.
I must have been in a generous mood. But if that's what I said.
Later.
No, Mr. Rodericks is not here. This is his fiancée. May I ask what this is regarding?
Yes, we show that he's reserved the Parisienne room here at the Saint-Georges. Please remind him that the rest of the money is due Sunday.
The rest of the money?
Yes.
Of course.
Gaping, Laura hangs up the phone. Now in the bedroom, she opens a dresser drawer and takes out a jewelry box. She opens it.
Oh, no, the dress.
Laura closes the box and puts it back in the drawer.
Hey, honey.
Dr. Rodericks, I presume. How was your day?
It's a jungle out there.
Paul takes off his suit coat, then gives Laura a quick kiss.
Tomorrow's that big dedication of the new wing, but, I'm on call till 9.
I was really looking forward to going. I never get out in the world without an apron.
It was just a cocktail party. Are you okay?
It's just the bills and everything.
Paul reaches up from his seat and pulls Laura onto his lap. She smiles at him.
Go without me. Now,
Who
can we get as an escort that wouldn't make me jealous?
Outside Wedding Bells, Art combs his beard in his cab side mirror. Inside, Lorne, the clerk, reviews receipts.
So that dress yesterday. Well, sweetheart, a beautiful gown like that gets snatched right up. Look around. Maybe you'll find something you like better.
As Laura hurries out, Lorne chomps a stick of gum in half. Outside, Laura runs to the cab, her hand covering her mouth. She climbs in, and Art stares at her stony face.
Oh, no, somebody got it.
Art, I'm so sorry. You gave us such a wonderful gift.
Don't you worry about me. I'm more worried about you.
Paul still thinks I have the dress. He rented a hotel banquet room for the wedding just so I could wear it, and I think he pawned his father's watch.
Art's eyes widen.
What am I going to do?
Art digs in his pocket.
You could use a good fairy godmother.
Now Art and Laura stroll into an elegant party.
Wow.
Art gazes at the well-dressed guests, an airy room.
Nice party, especially the guests.
Art bumps right into Dr. Weiniger.
Oh, sorry. Laura? Dr. Weiniger. I haven't seen you since last semester.
Dr. Weiniger, so good to see you, too. I've been very busy this spring.
You and Paul both. He's my best student. So when are you two going to get married?
Laura's smile fades.
Excuse me.
She walks away.
Oh, boy. Me and my big mouth.
Yeah, but you have an arm like a Cadillac leaf spring.
I'm sorry, did we...
Art the Dart Panner. Marshall High, class of 63. Running back.
Panner? You old rat. I didn't recognize you. How do you know Laura?
Oh, well, Laura
and Paul, they're like my own kids. You know, she's a little upset. They've got some big money problems.
Well, can't her parents help out? I mean, I know that Paul is an orphan.
Oh, father left when she was a kid. Mother died a couple of years ago. Yeah.
It's kind of hard to watch them struggle, don't you think?
They share a look. Now at the hotel.
The deadline was noon, Mr. Rodericks. We went ahead and booked the room with another party. If you'll remember, the deposit is non-refundable.
But I was helping to save a man's life. I'm an hour late, and you're keeping my $1,000.
My manager's on vacation. I'm not authorized to refund non-refundable deposits.
Don't ever get sick and come to my hospital, Haswell.
The clerk rings a bell. Now, at home, men in suits move furniture.
Stuff is okay, Laura?
Oh, yeah.
Guests mill in the living room. In the bathroom, Laura stands at a mirror in a white slip dress.
Ta-da! Hey, did anyone need some coffee to calm the nerves?
Hey, Art, I'm so glad you could come.
Paul shows off his tux.
What do you think, huh?
Oh, wow. Does she know that you're wearing a tux?
In the bathroom, Laura primps her hair.
Come on, dear. We are getting married today.
In the living room, Art gives Paul a firm handshake. Paul knocks on the bathroom door.
Can I come in? I need my toothbrush.
Laura opens the door a crack and holds out a toothbrush.
Now, don't peek. You're not supposed to see the bride before the ceremony.
But I've already seen you in the dress, if that's what you mean.
Of Paul, I have a confession to make. I sold the dress to pay for your tuition, and I feel so terrible, and I know that you sold your dad's watch to pay for the hotel, and now you don't have a dress or a watch.
Guess what I have a confession to. The hotel stole my deposit and gave the room to somebody else.
What?
But...
Paul holds the dress.
But that was after I got a call from Lauren at Wedding Bells.
She peeks out. Laura covers her face as Paul holds up the wedding dress.
Not bad, huh?
With a wide smile, Laura waves her arms excitedly, then kisses Paul.
Hi, everybody!
She hugs Art. Paul opens the door and lets in Dr. Weiniger.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Paul, I know, I'm sorry, I'm early, but, well, Art and I wanted to give you a wedding present.
Can't give away something this precious.
Art hands Paul a small velvet bag. Gaping, Paul opens it and pulls out his father's gold watch. Paul glances from Weiniger to Art, then gives Art a big hug. Paul embraces Weiniger, too.
Oh, hey. Laura, hurry. I can't wait to see you in this dress.
That's right. We are in a hurry, Paul. We have to be somewhere in 15 minutes.
But the minister isn't here yet.
He's been detained. Yeah, he was taken hostage.
What?
Weiniger shows Paul a limo outside.
What did you guys do?
Yeah, 30 years I've been driving cabs. Safe. For what, a tombstone?
Well, where are we going to go?
The Parisian room at the St. George. Now, you
see... Come on, Art. Don't give the whole thing away.
I can't believe this is happening.
Ready, everybody?
Laura steps out wearing the dress. It fits snugly on her trim frame, and she carries a bouquet of orange blossoms. Grinning, Paul walks toward her and knocks over the tray of coffees. Coffee flies across the room, splashing on Laura's dress. Everyone stares at the mess. A wide, splotchy stain streaks the white skirt. Laura holds out her arms and stares down at the dress.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, what have I done?
Paul kneels and wipes the skirt. Frowning, Laura gazes down at him.
Paul.
She touches his cheek.
I'm marrying you, not the dress. I'm the happiest woman in the world today, and nothing is going to change that.
Paul smiles, and Weiniger pats Art's shoulder.
Give me 2 seconds, everyone.
Later, a chauffeur shuts one of the limo's doors, then climbs into the driver's seat. The white stretch limo pulls away. In one of the apartment windows, the wedding dress hangs from a curtain rod, its splattered skirt rustling in the breeze. Now at the diner, Laura serves a plate to a customer. At the next table, Travis studies a menu.
Hey, Travis, long time no see.
Hey, are you married yet, or is there still a chance for me?
I am so married, it's disgusting. Where's our Zoe? I haven't seen her in months.
I have no idea. She's gone without a trace.
Wow. She was so in love with you, it wasn't funny.
How is it that everybody could see that but me?
Maybe you need to get yourself some glasses.
Travis's mouth hangs open. Later, he strides out of the diner. As he crosses the driveway of a dry cleaner, a minivan turns in, blocking his path. The driver stops, but Travis waves her on. She waves back, and the minivan pulls up beside the dry cleaner. Later, inside, a 40-ish woman looks at a rack of white dresses.
If I'm not mistaken, there should be one more. It was a medical student, Roderick's.
Oh, yeah. You should have seen what we had to do. It looked like someone threw a pot of coffee at the bride.
It's Billy.
Must have been a wild wedding. Okay, I will be right back. I'm just going to put these in the
drawer. Wait, you want me to help you with that?
No, that's right. I'm stronger than I look. Why don't you look for the other one?
Billy looks at a dress, then a receipt. Behind him, Lula walks in. She dumps the contents of her purse onto the counter.
Be careful, lady. You'll lose everything.
He turns and stares at Lula.
Oh, my God. Billy, you work here?
Oh, is that what they call it? 2 months of continuous employment?
Lula smiles.
Wow, that's some kind of a record.
Her smile fades as she looks him over.
You look so official in that uniform.
The blue kind of matches my eyes, don't you think? I also got a raise.
Oh, yeah? You got a car yet?
The woman returns for the dress.
Don't go anywhere, okay? Away, just a minute.
Billy grabs a dress off the rack.
There you go.
Ah, great. Thanks. So this is built to the hospital, right?
Yes, everything's all taken care of, Mrs. Spider. Do you want me to carry that
for you? No, Billy, you've got another customer.
Special girl. Thank you.
Mrs. Carter leaves.
I can't find my ticket.
No problem. I have the authority to have it totally taken care of. Just sign here.
He points to a notebook.
And you can put down your ring size, too, because, you know, I might be wanting to put a deposit on a certain something.
Now, slow down, Billy. Winning my heart is not like playing a lottery ticket.
I know. I'm fully aware. A job, a car... A proposal. You know, but this is good, you know. We got rules, you know. We got some structure, you know. It's all good. In fact, I got a document.
He takes out a camera.
Relax. It's mine.
Now, outside a white colonial house, Mrs. Carter picks up a newspaper. Inside, she reads beside her husband and daughter.
So the theme of this year's fundraiser is the wedding dress. Do you think that's politically incorrect, Robert? Men bidding for dates with the women who model the dresses.
Robert stares at his newspaper.
Last year, somebody paid $5,000 to nibble wilted watercress with Maura Figkin.
She married to that accountant.
Yeah, who, by the way, calculated that Maura's bidder paid $300 a bite. Ever since then, he's treated her like a much more valuable asset. He calls her his little write-off.
I bid on my own wife?
Yeah, go for it. For the children's hospital.
Later in the city, Mrs. Carter shuts her van, a paper tube in her hand. She climbs a staircase between two buildings, then glances across the wide alley. She spots Robert dialing his cell phone. She smiles. Then a blonde woman approaches Robert and they kiss. Mrs. Carter's smile slackens into a frown and her brown eyes widen. She answers her cell phone.
Hello?
Hey, hon.
Hey.
Hey, the New York trip is back on the books again. Jeff and I are on the 4 o'clock. I'll be back Friday late, okay?
Sure. Where are you? It sounds like you're having a good time.
Just leaving a boring business lunch. I'll call you tonight.
Costella.
Robert hangs up, then nibbles the woman's lips. He takes her hand and they walk away. His wife stares at them and bites her lip. Now at home, Mrs. Carter chucks a bag of golf clubs onto a pile of boxes at the curb. Later in her bedroom, she and Stella wear pajamas.
Mommy, when's Daddy coming home?
I don't know.
Does he know?
I'm not sure.
So, nobody knows.
They both climb in bed.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Stella, but nobody does know.
Stella looks down. Her mother gives her a kiss and they hug tightly. Now in the kitchen, Mrs. Carter, dressed in overalls, watches a kettle. She stares at a notebook on the counter. She opens the front door to a dark-haired man.
Mrs. Carter.
He holds a white dress.
Yes.
I'm sorry to just come over like this. I beg the cleaners to give me your address. My daughter's wedding is the day after tomorrow, and her dress was being altered. I think it was given to you by mistake.
Well, I don't have the dresses here. They're being stored at the hospital. It's for a benefit.
Is this your dress?
I don't know. I mean, the dresses were donated. I just picked them up.
She looks at the dress and smiles.
It's very, very pretty. Look at those little pearls. Look, the lace is all handmade. It's really, it's exquisite.
Unfortunately, it doesn't fit my daughter.
I would take you over there, but I'm busy, so I'll just get a pen and paper and give you directions.
Here's a pen, just wind it on my arm.
He hands her a pen, slings the dress over one shoulder, then pulls up his sleeve. Scrawled notes cover his forearm.
Where? You've got the phone book here. Why don't you give me your other arm?
He shifts the dress to his other shoulder.
It's the best secretary in the world. The only downside is it looks a little idiotic.
Mrs. Carter tugs up her sleeve, and inky words mark her arm. The man smiles at her.
You're the only other person I've met who does this. I take that as a good sign, except you're the only person I've ever met who carries around a spoon.
She stops writing.
Why don't I just drive over there and you can follow me, okay? And you take the dress.
But I thought you were busy.
Well, I lied. I'm just depressed, and I wanted to be left alone.
Worst thing you can do if you're depressed.
I know. Don't remind me. It's too depressing.
I know the feeling. It's like looking at your life through the wrong end of a telescope. I'm Steve.
He extends his hand.
I'm Madeline.
Later at the hospital, they search racks of dresses stored in plastic garment bags.
No dress, no preacher, no flowers. Should keep the groom under house arrest.
Why no preacher, no flowers?
Preacher has laryngitis. Florist thought it was next Saturday. And you stole my dress.
Hey.
Madeline's eyes brighten and she pulls out a dress.
Look. Is this it? This one?
As Steve walks over, he breaks into a smile.
That's it.
He grabs the white strapless dress.
Thank God.
I'm a landscape architect. I could help you with the flowers. Only I'm very expensive.
That's okay. I'm rich. And I'm desperate.
Madeline smiles.
I'm not really very expensive.
I'm not rich. I'm just desperate.
Now Steve fastens a necklace on a young bride.
Kathy, I can't do this. I'm trying to thread a needle with boxing gloves on.
I can get it, Daddy. I was just trying to make it feel useful.
They both smile. Light streams in through two stained glass windows.
I miss Mom today.
Every day, honey.
Madeline brings in a colorful bouquet.
Now, your dad said you wanted something different, Sam.
Wow, I love it. White is so white.
The church looks terrific.
Well, congratulations. Congratulations. Don't forget to breathe.
Okay. Kathy hugs her. Madeline waves to the flower girl.
Thanks, sweetie.
Thank you for everything.
Well, you are welcome. Bye.
Steve watches Madeline go. Later, she and Stella lounge in bed.
Mommy, I'm so hungry. Can we get some pizza?
Madeline looks up, her head on a pillow.
Sure. Would you like to order it yourself?
Stella gets up and answers the phone.
Hello? Hi, Daddy. When are you coming home?
Madeline rolls her eyes.
Who wants to talk to you?
Madeline holds out her hand for the phone. She takes it and walks into the next room, her lips pursed.
Mm-hmm.
Why haven't you been answering my calls?
This is the last time you're going to hear my voice. My lawyer will call you sometime this week.
Who did you get?
Your worst nightmare.
You're doing something you're really going to regret.
No, Rob, what I regret is having married you.
Robert sighs and Madeline hangs up. Stella watches her from the bedroom. Later, Madeline opens the front door. Steve holds up a dress.
Well, I found it in my truck.
Deja vu all over again.
That dress has your name on it.
Mm-hmm.
You wear it at the benefit?
Well, I don't know. I did take a little work.
Steve watches her hang the dress on the door.
A lot of work.
She turns from the dress to Steve.
Thank you.
Sure. I wanted to ask you something.
No, Steve, no. I'm getting a divorce now. And frankly, no offense, I am allergic to men right now. I don't want a male parakeet under this roof. I don't want a mosquito with male paraphernalia.
Well, if I'd been trying to pick you up, that would have been the sexiest response I could imagine.
Well, weren't you trying to pick me up?
It's not that. You're very... You know, you're very beautiful.
Madeline blinks her brown eyes.
Truth is, my wife was the love of my life, and I don't anticipate recovering from losing her.
Well, I understand that.
So, now, having cheered you up, what I was actually going to ask you, I'm running a job that needs a landscape architect, and let me give you the number in case you decide you're interested.
Steve nods for her arm. She holds it out and pulls up her sleeve. As Steve writes a phone number on her pale skin, Madeline glances away. Biting her lip, she peeks back at him. Daytime. Sunlight bathes the wedding dress as Madeline gently lays it on her bed. Using a stitch remover, she pulls a few stitches from the bodice of the dress, then sets down the tulle. With a sly smile, she pulls up her sleeve, showing the phone number on her arm. Later, she talks on the phone.
Hello, this is Madeline Carter. I'm a landscape architect. I'm calling at Steve Blaine's suggestion.
Madeline wets her lips, then looks at the ceiling. Now she follows Steve through an unkempt yard.
My neighborhood association is considering picketing me. They say I've got to tidy this place up.
Like, by a rake. You could have told me this was for you.
She strides across the yard.
I was afraid you'd get the wrong impression.
Madeline touches a wilted plant.
What do you think?
Well, I think it has possibilities.
Later, Madeline surveys from a rustic treehouse taking notes. Below, Steve leans against a ladder.
Hey!
Hey!
Just lost half an hour looking for this.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He takes it.
I hope you're a good climber.
Hey!
Later, she directs two workers.
The entire pile has to move, all right? Yeah. We've got to do that now. And then we got to down the decomposed granite.
Okay.
And the soil and then the mulch and what am I forgetting? Then the roses. That's...
Hey, can you keep it down? I'm trying to concentrate here.
Their problem. Okay, go. Ready, go.
Later.
That doesn't look half bad.
Madeline works on a trellis.
It's coming along.
Another project on the horizon, big one. Fix you and Stella a home-cooked meal Saturday night if you come over and look at the plans.
I don't know. Sounds a lot like a date.
Not a date.
Well, what is it?
It's a catered estimate.
Later.
You know what?
In his kitchen, Steve and Madeline clear dishes.
Robert never once washed a dish or made a meal. Not once the entire time we were married.
You let him get away with that?
I was as blind as a bat. You know how you look at your yearbook and you see that frizzed out hairdo and you think, oh my God, what was he thinking? That's how I feel about Robert and his attitude and his infidelity.
She dries a wine glass.
Why couldn't I see?
How could you? You were in love with him.
Yes, I was. Very much.
She sets the glass in a cupboard.
And what do you miss the most about your wife?
Everything.
Hey, you girls, stop jumping on that sofa. Jump on the other one so that it gets equal damage.
In the living room, the girls scamper to another sofa and start jumping.
Do you think you'll ever risk falling in love again?
I don't know. I got lucky once. I'm not sure I believe in second chances.
Madeline and Steve lock gazes. They lean forward and kiss each other deeply. With their lips pressed together, they stand locked in an embrace. As they kiss hungrily, Madeline sits back on the counter. Her hand caresses Steve's cheek. They pull out of the kiss, their faces still touching. Both breathe heavily, and their chests rise and fall.
I think I'd better go home.
I think you're right.
Nighttime at the Carters.
Just a minute.
Madeline rushes to the front door.
Dora, I miss you.
Robert?
Miss Stella.
Robert peers through a window.
Stella, sleeping.
Open up, please.
Later in their bedroom, Robert sleeps with his head on Madeline's chest. She stares at the ceiling. With a sigh, she rolls her eyes. Now Madeline looks in the bathroom mirror as she dries her hair. She wipes hazy steam from the glass. Downstairs, Steve stands on the doorstep, holding a bouquet of pink roses. Robert, in his bathrobe, opens the door.
You Robert?
Yeah. Who are you?
It's not important.
Steve turns and walks away. Eyeing him, Robert nods slightly, then heads inside. Upstairs, Madeline glances out the bathroom window. On the front walk, she sees Steve stride away from the house, still clutching the bouquet. Later, in the kitchen, Robert carries two dishes.
Okay, Stella, when you're down there, we could use a little help clearing the table. Okay, huh?
Madeline watches him carry the dishes to the sink.
How do you do this garbage thing?
She stares at Robert. Bending down, Madeline opens a cupboard beneath the sink. She smiles tightly at him.
I have to be in court for 8 o'clock. I need to make a few calls.
He pecks Madeline's cheek, then walks out. She touches her tongue to her teeth. Now Madeline strides into the bedroom, and Robert looks up from his phone.
This will be a quick call.
I just wanted to thank you.
Maddie, I wanted to come back. No need to thank me. I'll just be a sec.
No, I mean, I wanted to thank you for leaving me.
What do you mean?
Madeline stands and walks to the door. Turning back, she balls a dish towel in her hands, then throws it at Robert. Now Madeline walks through Steve's yard.
Okay, take it to the other side.
Okay. Have you seen Steve?
No, I haven't. Sorry. I really don't know.
Now yeah. Madeline sits on her bed with the wedding dress. Later, she paces around her bed. She checks her watch, shaking her head, then picks up the phone.
Steve, it's me.
Steve stands next to his answering machine, his arms folded.
Both of us, terrified. I know I am a mess. I guess there's very good reason you don't believe in second chances. It's because of this. Did you come by my house today? Well, I mean, who knows what you're feeling? Well, you know what you're feeling, and all I know is I, you, and we. Do you know what I mean?
She sits back on the bed, her brown hair falling over her face. Now with the wedding dress benefit.
Who wants to buy dinner with Sarah York? In a magnificent Vera Wang.
300.
Did I just hear $300?
We certainly did.
It's a cheap date. Thank you very much, Mr. York. Now, moving along to number 25.
Madeline stands at the head of the runway, wearing the wedding dress.
The boys home. This is Madeline Carter in her redesigned vintage World War II dress.
The dress is pared down, sleeveless, with a scalloped V-neckline. Madeline carries a bouquet of purpley blue hydrangeas.
Someone, 200, please. Thank you.
Smiling, Madeline rolls her eyes.
250, thank you. Can I hear 300? Yeah. Wait, I see $800 sold for $800 to the gentleman in the tuxedo.
Madeline glances around. Steve steps up to the runway.
Number 25, I believe you owe me a meal.
Steve.
I never bought anyone before, so I don't know whether I should bow to you or throw you over my shoulder.
Well, I think technically you just rented me for dinner.
Time's short, then. To hell with bowing.
Steve sweeps Madeline into his arms and spins her around. She leans her head back, beaming as he carries her away. Now Billy and Lula.
What? You lost another job?
I can't believe it.
I can. You don't concentrate.
Well, I'm going to get a new one at a courier service.
What about a car?
Not yet, but I'm going to get one.
Well, while you're in such a getting mood, you better get yourself another girl.
Now a truck pulls up to the hospital. Billy walks into a storage room.
Courier?
Madeline.
Oh, Billy. The dry cleaners.
That didn't work out.
Oh.
Hey, Mrs. Carter. I'm really late.
Oh, okay. This one goes to the museum, and this one goes to the Historical Society, and maybe you can help me with this?
She motions to the wedding dress. Billy grabs it.
Oh, my God. I'm really sorry, Mrs. Carter.
Right. Thank you. Well, it's okay. It's okay. Because it's a very special dress. And I don't think a little damage is going to make any difference.
Madeline folds the dress into a box.
Lay that tissue over the top. That'd be good. Just fold it both sides.
Billy closes the box. Madeline hands him a roll of tape and a packing slip.
Here. Wait, Bill.
Yeah, I'm going to put it on in the car.
Carrying the packing slip in his teeth, Billy loads the box into the back of the truck. He walks around to the front and climbs inside. The packing slip falls to the ground on top of another slip. Billy lifts them both and stares at them, then places them on two similar cardboard boxes. He switches them, then switches them back. He hurriedly sticks on one of the labels. Later, Billy closes the back doors of the truck. Fade to black.
Pete Johansson, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
In a courtroom, a grizzled old man lumbers toward a witness stand. He wears a crumpled orange baseball cap.
You do realize the penalty for perjury, do you not, Mr. Johansson?
Fred, just ask Pete if the creek changed course by itself, or if he went out there and diverted it with his tractor, as Joan claims he did.
I never touched that creek.
Mr. Johansson, you are aware, are you not, that the creek bed is the original property line between yours and Ms. Delano's properties?
Objection, Your Honor. The deed states only that the creek bed shall mark the boundary. It makes no reference to natural forces. Last month's rain could just as easily have diverted into Deke's property.
Sustained.
What?
Looks to me like an act of God, Fred.
Well, what about the tractor noise coming from Deke's the night before? Your Honor, we are all well aware of Deke's devious ways around here.
Objection.
Overruled.
May I say something, Your Honor?
I'm all ears.
I most distinctly heard the clanking of metal treads. Now, that's a sound I know very well, believe me. After 18 years of living next to that Philistine junkyard that he calls a sculpture garden.
The only clanking Miss Delano heard that night was her yellow dentures on her little pink nightstand.
Objection! I do not wear dentures. Call in Dr. Rinker and have him bring in my x-rays. And furthermore, my nightstand is blue.
Settle down. Settle down.
Your Honor, Deke Johansson is an aesthetic nightmare of a neighbor. How can an artist survive next to a war zone?
It's a sculpture garden.
Just out of curiosity, which one of you lived there first?
Well, that'd be me, Your Honor. I got first rights. Early bird gets the worm.
Yes, but the second mouse gets the cheese.
Well, here's a plain fact for you. Judge, my tractor's been broke down for the last 6 months. I got a signed statement from Ralph down to the garage.
The judge motions Deke's lawyer forward. Joan stares, her gray hair in a loose bun, as the lawyer hands the judge some papers.
Well, I'd say that wraps it up. Here's my ruling. It's common knowledge that Deke here and Joan have lived in discord for as long as any of us can remember. Therefore, in the interests of settling this once and for all, I order Deke Johansson to re-channel that creek bed back to its previous God-given course. And I order Joan Delano to pay for a survey to act as a permanent record of the property line until hell freezes over, or I get my hair back, whichever happens first. And as an addendum, I order both parties to exercise neighborly civility towards each other, or I will remand you both to the county jail for 10 days.
Later, Joan rides a bicycle over a wooden bridge. At a red house with a white picket fence, she walks her bike to the wraparound porch and stops. Turning to look out on the road, she pulls a rubber band from her long gray hair, letting it fall over her shoulders. Joan smiles as a delivery truck approaches. Her smile fades as it drives past her house and parks in front of Deke's junkyard sculpture garden next door. Joan glances around, then lifts a pair of binoculars to her eyes. She watches as the delivery man takes a cardboard box from the truck. Lowering the binoculars, she scowls as the delivery man drops off the package, then climbs back into his truck. Joan walks inside. Later, in a studio, she primes a canvas. She looks up and moves to the window. An old pickup truck parks out front. Deke climbs out and walks to the truck bed, where he grabs a large cardboard box. He struggles to carry the box to the front walk. Joan watches as Deke falls face first. As he stands and lugs the package to the porch, Joan hurries outside, brandishing a broom. Deke drops the box.
This is private property!
It's a bunch of old rags!
Smiling, Joan puts down the broom. She leans over and takes the packing slip from the box, then reads. She looks up as Deke drives away, then opens the battered box and pulls out the wedding dress.
Oh, my goodness.
She shakes out the long white skirt.
You're no rag.
Holding the dress, she looks out at the street. Later at night, Joan lies awake in bed, a strip of moonlight illuminating her face. She turns, then sits up, staring across the room at the wedding dress, which hangs on her door. The white fabric glows in the pale blue moonlight, patterned by shadows. Now Joan carries the dress down a narrow stairwell. Holding the hanger high in the air with one hand, she gathers the skirt in her other. She hangs the dress in her studio against a cloth backdrop. Joan adjusts the neckline in the moonlight, then sets up a canvas. In broad blue brushstrokes, she sketches the lines of the wedding dress on a white background. She swoops a dark line for the hanger and paints the beadwork with overlapping squiggles. Later, she paints with browns and blacks, outlining the beaded neck and the curve of the bodice. Joan works at a feverish pace, her eyes darting from the dress to her canvas. Morning. Joan puts down her palette and brush, stretching her hands. She steps back to look at the canvas, curling one arm over her head. Textured paint details the shadows and the curvaceous shape of the gown. Joan sits in a chair across from the painting, then runs a hand over her eyes with a weary sigh. Glancing up at her work, she smiles. Outside, Deke starts his tractor. He lifts the front-end loader, then drives forward. At the edge of the creek, four surveyors work to set the property boundary. As Deke drives through his junkyard, Joan steps out onto her porch, a mug in one hand. She cranes her neck to get a good look, then smiles to herself and takes a sip from the mug. Joan puts the mug down on the porch rail, then sits on the top step. A red gremlin coupe pulls up to the front gate. Joan looks up, her mouth open, as Zoe steps out. Joan stands, a smile on her lips.
Zoe? I was gonna call you, but I know how you love surprises. Is this a mirage, or is this my wild child?
They hug.
This is a wild mirage.
Fade to black.
Tell me everything.
I've already told you everything.
Well, keep going. What do you hear from Travis?
Travis who?
Oh, dear. Some things never change.
Joan looks up with a deep sigh, then walks to the window.
So, you and Deke aren't still feuding, are you?
Deke who?
Oh, man. Some things never change. You know, this has been going on for so long, I can't remember what started it.
Well, whatever it was, you can be sure it was his fault. Zoe, I have to show you something.
Now, in the studio, Joan puts the painting of the dress on an easel, then steps back. Zoe walks up to the canvas.
This is extraordinary work.
It's not done yet.
What gave you this idea?
Oh, I was blocked for so long. All I could do was prep canvas and clean brushes, and then this beautiful old dress came. Instead of my rank order. Don't question good fortune, as your grandma used to say.
Joan hugs her daughter.
I think this may be my favorite painting you've ever done.
Later, Deke looks at Zoe's car.
Okay, shut it up.
Zoe climbs out.
So?
Yeah, it's your bowl to drink later. But I can fix that for you today. Anything else that's concerning you?
Well, since you brought it up.
Well, go ahead and ask me. Turns out I'm the local genius.
I have a theory about why you and Mom have been at each other for so long. You two have some kind of weird dependency on each other. I don't think either one of you would know what to do if the other one weren't around, am I right?
Let me tell you something. Part of being a genius is knowing when to keep your mouth shut.
Unbelievable. Mom approved the survey, that's a good sign.
I'll tell you what, I'll fix this car for you if you promise not to mention your mother again.
What mother?
Now in town, Deke climbs out of his truck. He spits, then walks into a diner where Joan sits with Zoe. Deke takes a seat at the counter.
See you there.
Hey, Deke, what can I get for you?
I'll have the T-bone, coffee, mashed potatoes, string beans, side of fries and onion rings, that soup du jour, and some bread, and I'll have the peach pie a la mode for dessert.
Right. He spots Joan.
Cancel that. I just changed my mind.
It's good you're going, Johansson. Leaves enough food for the rest of us.
Deke leans close to Joan.
Is Delano?
Delano.
You can kiss my rusty butt.
Oh, I've been contaminated. He reeks of WD-40.
I think he's cute.
Who? Rusty's butt. No kidding.
Later.
What do I get for all this posing?
Motherly love.
Oh, no. Anything but that. Oh. I gotta take a break.
2 minutes.
Stretching, Zoe stands. She knocks over a jar.
Wait, sorry.
Bending to pick it up, Zoe spots the wedding dress behind the cloth backdrop.
Hmm?
What?
This is the dress you painted?
That's it. Something, isn't it?
Mom, I know this dress.
You what?
Travis's dream girl married him in this dress. It belonged to his aunt. How in the world did this ever end up in a box of rags?
So that can't be the same one.
Mom, I know it is. There used to be pearls all over this bodice. And the sleeves have been removed, but you see this? Nobody blind stitches like this anymore. Look at this beautiful neckline.
Zoe blinks back tears.
Maybe you could restore it to its former glory.
Zoe faces her mother. Fade to black. Now, morning. Joan smiles as Zoe hangs the dress on the front porch. Deke pulls up in the Gremlin. As he climbs out, Joan frowns, getting to her feet. Zoe smiles, then purses her lips as her mother steps inside and shuts the door.
Hi.
Hi, Zoe. Here you go. She's running real good now.
Yay, thank you.
Who's the lucky groom?
Oh, it's not for me, it's my mom's. I wish I could afford to pay you something, Dee.
Oh, so that's my pleasure. I live for the days when things break down. Is she moving away then?
Maybe. She hasn't decided yet.
His face falls.
Mom? Deke thinks dress is yours. You should have seen the look on his face when I suggested you were getting married.
Well, why on earth would you tell him a thing like that?
You two haven't had a good fight in a while. Things are getting a little dull around here. He said he didn't care anyway.
Of course he doesn't. He said that?
A smile spreads on Zoe's face. Now jars rattle on Joan's kitchen shelves. A knick-knack sculpted chicken shakes on its perch. In Deke's junkyard, men and women load junk into truck beds, carrying the scrap metal away. In her house, Joan runs into the kitchen. Gaping, she glances out the window.
I don't believe it. He's finally getting rid of all that junk.
Hey, Mom. Do you still want this pearl bracelet? It's broken. You want to use it for your dress?
I love you, too.
He's doing it for you, you know.
Trust me, Zoe, someone made him an offer he can't refuse. Look, whatever. I don't have to look at that junkyard again.
Mom, believe it. He cares about you so much, he swallowed his pride and gave up something that's really precious to him. Do you know what I would give to have someone love me like that?
Joan stares back at Zoe, then looks down. Fade to black.
The program is sponsored by Centrum, complete from A to Z.
Nighttime. Joan reads a paper as Zoe works on the wedding dress. Zoe answers the phone.
Delano residence.
Can I speak to Joan, please?
She's right here.
Smiling, Zoe hands the telephone to Joan.
Hello?
Well, I hope you'll be happy now.
Deke. Thank you. Two words I thought I'd never say to you.
Yeah, well, could I hear them again? I didn't hear them the first time on account of being in shock.
Don't push your luck.
Well, goodbye then.
Goodbye. And thank you.
Joan puts down the phone. Grinning, Zoe hangs up the receiver. Across the way, Deke hangs up. He paces in front of a window, rubbing his hands together. In robe, Joan steps out onto her porch. She gazes at Deke's house, then reaches out for the wedding dress. On the dark street, Deke walks alongside the picket fence to the gate. He opens the gate and walks up the front path. Spotting him, Joan turns and takes a step back. She raises a hand to brace herself as he approaches.
Joan? If you run away and get married, things aren't going to be the same around here.
Who's running?
You're going to live here with your new husband?
If someone asks me to marry them, I wouldn't budge from this place if that's what you mean.
Isn't that your dress?
I couldn't get into that dress with a crowbar, you ridiculous man.
Deke steps forward and takes off his hat. A smile brightens his face.
You know, I always planned on getting married myself someday.
Why didn't you?
Oh, you know, life's little clutters. But I just recently cleared out some notions, and now, I'm afraid. If I was to get down on one knee now, I might not be able to get up again.
Deke, you're the one who gave up your junk, artifacts.
And on top of that, you come all the way up to me, on my property, without a shotgun. What's your middle name?
My grandpa's name, Albert.
Well,
she hands him the dress, then kneels in front of him.
Deke Albert Johansson.
Zoe looks on.
Will you...
Joan looks down, then raises her gaze to meet Deke's.
Will you...
Yes.
She smiles up at him.
Have dinner with me.
Yes, I will. Yes, I will. Miss Delano.
They gaze into each other's eyes.
Yes.
As they move slowly forward, their lips meet in a gentle kiss. Joan and Deke close their eyes as they embrace. Inside, Zoe smiles, her eyes glistening with tears. Now in the city, Billy drives Lula along a rain-soaked street. He pulls the old Pontiac to a stop.
Okay, don't look till I say so.
In an apartment, black and white photographs of Lula line the walls.
Keep your eyes shut.
He opens the door.
Watch yourself. Keep your eyes shut.
Billy leads Lula into the room and positions her in front of the photos.
Okay, open them.
A hint of a smile curls at her lips. She turns to Billy.
And you got a job?
I realized there was a reason why I couldn't hold down those other jobs. I didn't want those jobs. But I now know what I want.
And that's really your car?
The car, and the job, and now this.
Billy takes a ring box from his pocket and opens it.
So you're all out of excuses.
He kneels in front of Lula, gazing up at her.
Lula, I promise to cherish you. I promise to spoil you.
Bill... I don't know what to say.
No. Don't say anything. Loving you has changed my whole life.
Lula swallows hard.
And Lula, I didn't change my whole life so you could change your mind.
Go on about the spoiling part.
First, can I see your knees?
She draws her denim skirt up.
Things are looking good.
Now, in Travis's studio, Steve carries a toolbox.
Hey, I got the door for you.
Cheers. Should have that new darkroom finished by the end of the week.
Funny, what you said last week.
Okay, you got me.
Yes.
Travis walks to the stove and turns on a burner under a stainless steel teapot.
Iris! Hey, it's Steve. Relax. Oh, it's Steve.
Travis opens the door.
Zoe.
Hey.
I don't believe it.
Hey, you.
I tried to find you. You have no idea.
Hannah told me. I talked to her this morning. All this time, I thought you were married.
God, no. No. Come in, please. Oh, hey, come meet my new assistant. Fifth one since you, and the best by far.
Billy stands on a ladder.
Hey, I'm Billy.
Hi.
Is she the Zoe?
Yeah, she's the one.
Wow. No wonder.
And I'm the fool to let her get away.
I have something to give you.
Billy gives Travis a knowing smile. Zoe brings in the wedding dress. It's restored, with voile sleeves and a ruffled neckline, a beaded belt at the waist.
I think this belongs to you.
Hey, isn't that the... Nah, never mind.
Billy, don't you have prints to develop?
Come on, Iris.
What was that? Sorry, how did you find this?
Well, I guess you could say it found me.
Oh!
sorry. You have no idea how many times I think about that day. With you in the dress.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's even more beautiful than I remember it being. And so are you, Zoe. So are you.
She smiles. They hug, and Travis pulls her close. Now the sun shines over Joan's house as Iris bounds off the porch. A flower girl hurries across the lawn to a gazebo festooned with flowers, where a priest and Travis face a small assembly of wedding guests. Zoe and Joan walk up the aisle. Zoe wears the wedding dress, a cascade bouquet of white flowers in one hand. Among the guests, Laura and Paul smile as the bride walks past, and in a flashback, Laura wears the dress. Now Joan kisses Zoe's hand and takes her bouquet. Zoe turns to Travis with a smile, and the priest steps forward. Sitting with the wedding guests, Lula smiles at Billy. And in another flashback, the dress flutters around Billy in Travis's Jeep. A rustle of fabric fades into a flashback of Madeline in the dress, with Steve at the benefit. They sit together at the wedding, broad smiles on their faces. In the gazebo, Travis's Aunt Hannah reads from her diary, and in a flashback, she wears the dress, a young woman with long blonde hair. In a final flashback, Joan beams at Deke as they stand together on the porch. At the wedding, they smile at Zoe and Travis, who embrace in their first kiss as husband and wife. Later, Zoe carefully folds the dress with its glistening pearl bodice into a suitcase and shuts the lid. Fade to black.